Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome to Hollywood Crime Scene. This is Rachel Fisher.
Hi, this is Desi Jettikin.
We're back.
Yeah.
It's great to be back, Desi.
Yeah.
I was starting to not know what to do with myself.
We're sort of struggling to get back in the groove.
Mentally?
I mean, a little bit.
Mentally, I struggled writing this episode. I'm not going to lie. So please be nice.
Yeah. They're always so nice. Should I do Patreon?
You do Patreon. How? I mean, are we just going to do some of them? Or
yeah, because there's a lot. We obviously have a lot of people who subscribed in July. Thank you.
Thank you.
We did finally post for July at the very last day, so that is all up there. So yeah, thanks for joining this past month. I'll start and I'll go till it seems like crazy.
Okay.
And then we'll get the rest in the next few weeks.
Sounds good.
If you would like to subscribe to the bonus content and ad-free episodes, you can do that at patreon.com/HollywoodCrimeScene.
I'm going to put a link in our show notes. I've started doing that.
Oh, wow.
Like a real professional.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
So in the past month, we had Melissa, Brandon, Kay, Jessica, Nikki, Smidgen Dublin, I don't know if that matters, Nico, Natalie, Junkyard Honey, Nicole, Angelique, Jen, Adam, Kara, Claire, Emily, Anissa, Ceylon, Nick, Molly, Clark, Samantha, Michael, Pube. I hope I'm saying that right.
That person just wanted us to say pube.
Okay. Well, we said it. I hope you get off on that. Maybe that's their real name and I'm saying it wrong.
But
it
that's is spelled terrible.
It is spelled P-U-B-E. So in my defense, that is how we spell pube. Maybe it's pube. Sorry. Anyways, you got a little extra attention there. Mauricio, Stephanie, Olivia, Destiny, Kristen, Hannah, Kenya, Jen, Melanie, Amy, Natalie, Tia, Christine, Adeline, Lizzie, Shay, Sarah, Robert, Lavish, Teresa, Luke, Sharar, Tracy, Mel, and that's it. That's where I'm going to stop.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks,
thank you
guys.
So much for supporting the show. We really appreciate it, and we hope you enjoy all the bonus content and ad-free episodes.
Yeah.
And Melon says thank you, too, if you can hear him.
Thanks for the snacks.
It's true. You are helping pay for Melon's snacks and treats. So thank you. Now, this was very requested to do more Chateau Marmont.
Yeah.
Content.
People were mad when you stopped.
Well, we had to do Model May.
That's right.
It was going right into Model May, which was my poor planning on my part.
Right.
But you know
but
what?
That's good.
I realized in the old days of this show, we did like a Disneyland, two Disneyland episodes way spaced apart.
Yeah.
We used to do it like that. We used to do some two-parters. So this isn't...
Well, especially like stories where they're not like one linear story, but it's like little bits and pieces thrown together.
Like we're not going to do Richard Ramirez part one in 2022 and then do part two like the following year. That's
no,
not going to happen.
No one's waiting for that.
No.
They're going to go listen to another podcast to find out what happened.
So my main source for this episode just disappeared. Where is it? Leave this in. It's a book by Sean Levy. It's called The Castle on Sunset, Life, Death, Love, Art, and Scandal at Hollywood's Chateau Marmont. And I also used a lot of old newspaper articles.
Yeah.
So what we talked about in part one of Chateau Marmont is it's beginnings in the early days from the 1920s all the way up until the end of the 1950s.
Right.
So in this episode, we're going to be covering the 60s to the early 80s.
Good. Should be some good stories.
We got some stories. And also, as I was writing this, I realized there's the potential for a lot of other episodes about other stuff. So I'll get to that.
Okay.
By 1963, the Chateau Marmont owner, Erwin Brettauer, sold the property to real estate developer William Weiss. The chateau would actually be sold and bought again a few more times over the next few years.
Right.
Like, this hotel changed ownership a lot. One-time owner Guilford Glaser said this of his short time owning the property: "We added some touches and upgraded to some extent, but it became a pain in the neck. I poured a lot of money into the place, but it became an expensive project and a losing proposition." So he sold it in 1965. Meanwhile, the Sunset Strip had exploded into a destination for young people. Gone were the days of old Hollywood glamour. In was rock and roll, discotheques, and go-go dancers. Mm. And a lot of kids,
they flocking went in on that.
There wasn't this like white tablecloth dining vibe anymore, or cocktail lounge. It was like
they want a tin tray to do lines on.
Well, this is before cocaine.
Oh, sorry. Well, it's always cocaine.
This is before cocaine
70s.
This is before Coke era.
So this is still 60s.
This is the mid 60s, and this is when the youth culture is exploding.
So they're doing more psychedelics, or not even yet.
I don't know. I'll ask my mom tomorrow what she was doing in 1965.
Yeah.
So, but it's like popping on the strip with a lot of young people. Teenagers flocked to the area where they enjoyed live music and dancing. The area was Mecca for counterculture, hippies, and young people who liked to party. It was fun as hell.
It looks fun.
I'm sure it was a lot of fun. Now, this is where I realized, my mom just texted me. Should I ask her? What drugs were you doing in 1965?
Well, because this would be like when the Doors are starting up, or I guess that's a little later.
Yeah.
But it's that environment that they're sprouting out of still.
Yeah, it's like, times are changing.
Yeah.
The culture's changing in America, and it's a very youth-driven culture at this time. So this made me realize we have to do an episode on the Sunset Strip riots.
Oh, yeah. I think we talked about that.
Yeah. Did we?
Yeah.
We didn't do an episode. Maybe
no,
we talked. All right. Let's
not.
It
came up at some point. No, you should. Why wouldn't we? We didn't do it.
Okay. Well, we're very rusty right now.
Yeah.
My brain is like oatmeal. So by 1966, the city imposed a strict 10 p.m. curfew in the area, prompting protests and eventually sparking the Sunset Strip riots, and soon leading to a 21 and over rule for many of the strip's nightclubs. Because before, they had all these like places that served alcohol, but teens could go because there was live music there.
Wait. I think that this is the genesis, the Sunset Riot, Sunset Strip riots were the genesis for that song "Stop" by Stephen Stills or whatever. Stills.
Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah, but he wrote it, the guy Stephen Stills.
Yeah.
Because remember when he did it with Billy Preston at the Emmys? It was really weird during COVID.
Wait, he did it during COVID?
He did a duet with Billy Porter, but they weren't together. But they filmed it and spliced them together. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm having that memory.
I don't even.
Because it really stuck with me. Because I was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
But yeah, that song, you always assume that song's about the Vietnam War. But it was actually about this.
It was actually, it was written, that song, "Stop, Hey, What's That Sound? Everyone look what's going around." I like when, in the late 90s, when Public Enemy sampled it for He Got Game.
Oh, right, yeah.
I love that song.
It's a good thing to sample.
It's a great little sample.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's what that song was about. And when we do our episode,
we'll get more into it.
We'll get into it.
And we'll do the Billy Preston. I'm
sorry. We'll do a recreation.
We'll recap the video for a bonus or something.
That sounds great, Desi. So throughout the late 60s and 70s, the Strip continued to be a destination for musicians. The newly opened hotels on the Strip, like the Sunset Marquee and the Hyatt House, became havens for touring rock bands and the wild parties they brought with them. That's not to say that musicians weren't staying at the Chateau at this time. It's just that these newer hotels were more easily accessible to groupies and fans.
Yes.
Because the Chateau is like tucked away.
It is.
And
you have to kind of walk uphill. No one wants to do that.
And nobody wants to walk uphill in their shoes.
Their go-go boots.
Their go-go boots. They're going to slip. Those things are always very slippery.
That hill is stressful to walk up. It's not that it's a long walk. It's just very steep.
It's very steep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, these hotels seem to have a more lax policy about publicly degenerate behavior.
Ooh.
So it was like, even though like degenerate stuff was happening within the confines of the Chateau, it was just more outwardly displayed.
Yes.
And probably like just seemed like way more of a rager destination.
Right.
To go to these spots. Led Zeppelin would apparently book 6 floors of the Hyatt House when they stayed there. One of their more memorable stays included John Bonham riding a motorcycle through the hallways.
Oh.
Now, that story is usually falsely attributed to him riding a motorcycle through the Chateau, but it was actually, it was the Hyatt House.
Okay. The Hyatt House just doesn't sound.
Well, it became known as the Riot House.
Oh, that sounds better.
Yeah. Alice Cooper apparently liked to play naked football at the hotel.
Oh.
These are among the countless tales of debauchery that occurred at this infamous hotel. So I was like, we need to do a whole episode.
Yeah.
On the Riot House. Yes. And the Sunset Marquee. Friend of the pod, Dave Navarro, said this about the Sunset Strip hotels. Oh. He said this much later, probably in the 90s or 2000s, but he said, for some reason, behavior at the Chateau that would end up in the tabloids, you take that same behavior and go over to the Marquee, and you're pretty much right as rain. I've been escorted off that property a number of times and then allowed back the following night.
Just a little light tap on the wrist.
Yeah, so that's the vibe. Yeah. They're like, all right, it was a little too crazy tonight.
We need to stop it that night,
but
you're
back.
Welcome back. Yeah, I feel like that's fair.
Yeah. In 1969, one of the Chateau's residents was stabbed in his room. That's not a good transition.
Yeah, that's not fine.
That's not.
That deserves a harsh punishment.
One of the residents was stabbed in his room during an argument. This is at the Chateau. 44-year-old Eric Scott was involved in the production of the musical Hair.
Okay.
And he had been staying at the Chateau. He got into an argument with 23-year-old Donald Arthur Teague, who was also staying at the hotel. Teague wasn't involved with Hair. Hair would make a statement later. They're like, this guy was not involved in our musical. But these two men were apparently working on another musical together. So Scott, the guy who got stabbed, he accidentally erased a 5-hour-long audio tape that Teague had made, which caused him to fly into a rage and stab Scott in the stomach with a pair of scissors.
Damn.
Like, when he came back to his room and discovered that this, like, tape that he had worked on was erased, Eric Scott, apparently, according to him, laughed. Was like, oops.
Oh.
And laughed, and he was not happy about that. He's like, you think you're so cool with your Hair musical? This musical is not good enough for you.
How do you like being stabbed? You think you're cool, too cool
to get stabbed with scissors? He also attacked him with a chair.
Damn.
Then he attempted to flee the hotel, but he was arrested in the lobby.
That's fast.
So it was short-lived.
Yeah.
Actor Richard Harris managed to get kicked out of the Chateau. He returned back to the Chateau one night at 2 a.m. after a night of drinking on the Strip. He was so drunk that he started wandering the halls and pounding on all the doors of the other guests and screaming that there was a nuclear attack.
That's a golden age of drunken British actors.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a famous drunken one. So he was yelling, they've dropped the bloody bomb.
Wow.
And none of the guests appreciated that. I mean, that's scary.
It's
being
scary.
Woken up at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
When you're like, are we?
And it sounds
attacked?
More real because it's a British guy.
What?
It's like more authoritative.
Yeah, it's more
like a documentarian or something.
Yeah, it's more official sounding.
Totally. Like it's not like you're like, hey guys, the bomb's coming or something. He right. probably made it sound very real. He's a good actor.
He's a very good actor. Yeah. So that's terrifying. But they kicked him out. He was done.
Wow. Forever?
Forever.
Damn.
He's like one of the only people in my research at this time, during this time, of all the rock stars that were kicked out of the chateau.
That's punk rock. Right?
Yeah, he's like, oh, Led Zeppelin, you think you're so cool?
You would never guess him if you were like, who is the one person who got kicked out of the Chateau Marmont in the late 60s?
Right.
No one would say Richard Harris.
But he managed to do it. I mean, that is like a... That's like a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Conversely, Jim Morrison had to leave the Hyatt in 1970 for his antics. So he got kicked out of the Hyatt.
Oh, so that's the worst. That's the hardest one to get kicked out of, right?
Yeah. He got kicked out of the Riot House specifically for his love of dangling off balconies.
I walked past this antique store the other day in Pasadena, and in the front window was a huge poster of Jim Morrison. And on it, it said, it's that pose where he's kind of like his arms are out, yes, like Jesus.
That's the famous one.
And it's a real photograph, you know, it's not like a painting, and it says American poet.
Oh.
I was like, I need to see who buys this because that would be hilarious.
Me in high school.
Yeah, totally.
Totally me or my boyfriend in high school.
Well, because someone said a few weeks ago, they were like, he's so hot.
I was like,
he is really hot.
He's really
like the
hot.
Doors get dunked on a lot. But he's undeniably really hot until he probably opens his mouth at a party or something. You're like, oh, get this guy away from me. Because he probably is someone who talks nonstop, for sure.
He's that guy.
But he is very hot.
He's very hot. Here's what I don't understand. At some point in the last 15 years, I feel like everyone started hating on the Doors and making fun of them.
Right.
I, at one time in my teen years, was like a Doors stan, which I feel like a lot of teens get into the Doors.
Because the music is good.
Yeah, the music's good.
It's good. It's fun music. If you haven't heard that style before, it's like the organ. It's very cool. The thing about the Doors is it's like sometimes the fans of a thing is annoying.
Yeah.
It makes you not like the thing or something. Yeah. I think that's at play here because they worship him so much. It's kind of
right.
like that stuff is always easy to poke fun on.
Like, I don't think he's like the best lyricist of all time. I don't think he's obviously not the best singer. I think he's really hot and he's not. It's not like when I think about like bands that are my favorite bands, they're not even on the top 10.
He's very hot. He has something. And he's also insufferable.
Yeah.
So maybe he would have grown out of it at some point. But this is an insufferable guy. We all know the super hot guy who thinks they're like a fucking genius.
Right.
And it's just like, no, let's just like fuck or whatever. Or whatever. Like.
And he wants a lot of attention.
Yes. He wants to know that he read James Joyce.
Right.
Like, do you know what I mean? It's just like that type of guy. The bio on him is so good.
We need to. And that was another thing where I was like, okay, when are we doing our Jim Morrison episode? Because that'll be a fun one.
I love that book so much when I read it. And I know there's some other ones that are really good. Yeah, he would be a fun episode.
Totally. So Jim Morrison gets kicked out of the Hyatt House for dangling off of the balconies. This was a thing he liked to do, was like dangle off of stuff.
He had a death wish.
He loved dangling off shit. He called this like his Tarzan act.
Ugh.
Morrison resumed his wild parties at the chateau.
Okay.
He's like, all right, I'm going to the chateau now. Yeah. You don't want me at the Hyatt House?
Fine.
Going up the street.
I'll get kicked out of here tonight.
One time, the chateau's maids discovered blood on the sheets and on the walls after a particularly raucous night.
Damn.
So I don't know what he was doing.
You know he pisses into things.
Ew.
Do you know what I mean? Like every time he stays there, he always like pisses in the planted, the potted plants.
Yes. Yes.
And they just are like, ugh.
He's a pisser.
Just change them all. Because he gets drunk. His dick is just hanging out at some point, and it's just pissing with him not even thinking about it. It's just coming out. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know if you had a friend like this in high school, but I feel like, at least in the kinds of people I hung out with, there was always one person in a group of friends, like a guy who would always, his dick would just end up out at the end of the night or at some point during the night.
And it's just soft from being drunk.
Yeah, like my friend's boyfriend, his dick would always just like come out at the end of the night. And he was really hot, so nobody minded.
Right.
But it was always like...
At some point, though, you're kind of like, okay, come on. Like, I've seen that dick too much.
I mean, it became just like a joke.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It just became a joke. Like, oh, such and such's dick is out.
Yeah.
Kevin's dick is out. That's not his real name.
It's always Kevin.
It really wasn't his real name. But so I feel like Jim Morrison is that guy whose his dick just ends up.
Oh,
out.
Because he's never had anyone reject him sexually ever.
Right.
Too. So he just doesn't care. Like he has no self-consciousness about his looks or body or women wanting him, right. I think, too.
Yeah, so I think it was just like out, like dang, not like he wouldn't even take off his leather pants. It would just be dangling out of
Yeah. Them. Oh, totally. The dangling wiener. I could picture it.
So Morrison decided he wanted to play Tarzan at the chateau.
Oh, no.
But this time he suffered a fall.
Watch out for that tree.
That's George of the Jungle.
Yeah. Whoa. Remember, he tries to do the Tarzan thing and hits the tree. Right?
Yes.
Okay, I did take an edible before.
Desi.
I'm so sorry. I took half of one because I felt a little like tension.
I feel tension too.
Yeah. So
sorry, I just have to raw dog it.
Well, you know what? You got yours. You finished it too quickly.
I did. I completed way too early. So anyway, he climbed up onto the roof. He grabbed a hold of the rain gutter in an attempt to swing into his bedroom window.
That is something that makes so much sense when you're drunk, right? You think you got it all figured out, right?
Did you ever get really injured when you were drunk?
I don't think I got real. I have a lot of minor injuries. Like I've fallen downstairs. Like when I remember wearing like these huge fucking platform clodhopper shoes and walking down a steep staircase into like a bar in Manhattan somewhere and just completely missing the slip and sliding all the way down and just being like, I'm fine. And then waking up the next morning with like bruises on my fucking hip and like that kind of stuff has happened to me a lot.
Yeah.
But nothing major, super major. I don't think you.
Okay, so the girlfriend of the dick guy, she was my best friend in high school. And we got really drunk in Napa one night and decided to go streaking.
Oh, right,
right,
right.
The streaking story.
That story, yeah.
We both ran into a ditch because it was so dark because it's Napa. And I ended up just suffering minor injuries, but she broke her ankle, but she didn't feel it until the next day.
Oh, no.
Because we were that wasted.
Yeah.
And so we showed up, we were like in a play together also. So we showed up to like the first day back at rehearsal and the director sees her stumble in wearing a boot.
Yeah.
And he's like, you guys.
Yeah. No, I've never had anything like that. But I mean, honestly, it's pure luck because I've definitely been stupid.
Yeah. I mean, look.
And I'm always wearing inappropriate shoes
right.
when I'm drinking, which is a bad combo.
So... He eats shit. He fell two stories.
Damn. Did he land on like the cabana?
The cabana?
Like, oh like how do you survive?
That would be so fun to bounce off one of those.
I mean, like, it looks fun, but you know it's not going to be like that.
You know, like in movies when the person falls and they fall onto like the awning.
Or like a pillow truck rolls right at that moment.
Yeah, it's always a pillow truck or an awning. Or like a garbage.
Yes. Yeah.
He
splatted on the cement.
He splatted on the ground and hurt himself. He like met up with his fellow bandmates the next day and they're like, wow, we didn't think he would he actually got hurt this time.
Yeah.
It happened. I'm sure he kept swinging from windows.
I would love to have seen this.
That's like, you know who else used to like to act like Tarzan is Eddie Vedder.
I can see that.
Eddie Vedder, back in like the early days of their fame, Pearl Jam's fame, I've just heard stories. I've never been to a Pearl Jam concert.
I bet you a lot of people hear things that have been done in the past, like him doing that and also want to do it.
Yeah, Eddie Vedder would like swing from the rafters, apparently.
I mean, I've always thought it would be fun to swing, but I just don't have any arm strength. Like, I can't hold on to the rope. I would slide down so fast.
My hands get sweaty really easily.
Right. Like, maybe if I wore gloves or there was a knot for my feet to sit on. Like, it's not that I've definitely thought about it a lot because it does look really fun, but I can't hold myself on a rope. It's hard.
It is hard. It is hard. So, this is an unrelated story, but we had to include it. The following, I have my segues. This is how rusty.
Oh, that's a segue.
This is a segue,
but we had to do it.
I'm going to say my writing in only the span of a month has declined severely.
Really? Well, you know what? You also really didn't do a July episode because I did three George Michaels.
June.
I'm sorry, June.
You're right.
So it's almost 2 months probably.
I've had 2 months off
yeah.
from writing a story. So I'm like...
Right. And before that you had COVID.
Oh.
So okay, it's been over 2 months.
All right. So now I don't feel as
guilty.
Yeah,
see?
Look, I'm rusty, you guys. Wait, let's see what time we're at and then maybe I'll get back to that story. Maybe it's time for a break.
Yeah, just take a break.
Okay, we're going to take a break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm a huge fan of Rocket Money. Not only did they help me find and cancel some of my unwanted subscriptions, in general, they've given me a great picture of my financial status and helped me save money. I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I love the dashboard that shows me this month's spending compared to last month's, so I can clearly see my spending habits. Plus, they'll help me create a custom budget and keep my spending on track. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/HollywoodCrimeScene. That's rocketmoney.com/HollywoodCrimeScene. rocketmoney.com/HollywoodCrimeScene. I'm a huge fan of cashmere, and that can be a very expensive habit. That's why I was so excited to find Quince. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I am absolutely living in my black cashmere mini dress, and to be honest, I want to buy like 3 more because I can't imagine my life without them. So indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/Hollywood for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Hollywood to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Hollywood.
In 1971, actor Bud Cort
oh,
of Harold and Maude fame.
Yeah, love him.
He was living at the chateau. How old was he?
This is like 1970?
71.
71. God, probably. Yeah. He's probably really young.
So following the film's release, Harold and Maude's stans stalked the actor at the chateau. Because you know it's like a bunch of weird goth girls.
Oh my God. Can you imagine?
And they're like, I want to fuck Bud Cort.
I'll go to a funeral with you.
So his stans would leave him creepy gifts outside of his room.
Oh my God.
The gifts included pictures of dead babies, mini coffins, and gravestones.
Exactly as we suspected.
Exactly as we... That's the whole story.
That's so creepy. He must have been so bored with all of that stuff.
Because he probably got it all the time with all these girls who were like, I'm weird. I'm going to send you a coffin.
Do you know what's really weird? I went to look and see how old Bud Cort is.
Yeah.
And his birth date or an age are not on his Wikipedia.
What?
Isn't that crazy? I've never seen that before. Like, at least sometimes if they don't know, they have like a range sometimes.
Right.
But he was in Harold and Maude in 1971. So that had just come out when this is happening, obviously. And I don't know how old he was. I mean, I think he was older than he looked.
Yes.
Right?
He looked like very, like a teenager in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm sure he was like a little bit older.
I think he was like 20.
Okay, so now I'm seeing he was born in 1948. So yeah, he would have been like 22 or 21 when he filmed it.
That makes sense. Let's go back a few years.
Okay.
In 1967, a year after the chateau was put up for auction as it changed ownership once again, the Los Angeles Times published a piece titled Chateau, Last Elegance on the Strip. The article's author, a woman named Barbara Wilkins, wrote, quote, only the Chateau Marmont, a residential hotel for movie stars and royalty, is left as a reminder that Hollywood was once grand.
Hmm.
The piece talked about how, although the hotel is still famous for its service to Hollywood elites, the service itself has changed since its opening. There are no longer butlers and servants to attend to the guests unless they bring their own.
Ugh. Do you have to bring my own butler?
By the time of this 1967 article, guests were only offered a continental breakfast. Mm. So they often ordered food to be sent from the Sunset Marquee or from a place called Chicken Delight.
Ooh.
Now I was like, what the hell is Chicken Delight? So I had to look it up. Chicken Delight was a chain restaurant.
I feel like I can see the sign. Like I've seen that image or something. Ooh.
That looks good, doesn't it?
It's just a fried chicken place.
It's just a fried chicken joint. Oh,
dude, I would love to get a bucket of that at Chateau Marmont.
So it says, served in disposable heat seal plates, just open and eat. Ideal for family gatherings, outdoor barbecue, unexpected guests, parties, or as a kitchen holiday for mom. Ask about our special party service. Chicken Delight. This is what you can order. For $1.39, you can get a half special grown chicken.
Special grown?
That's what it says. Half special grown chicken, French fries, cranberry sauce, and a muffin.
Nice.
You can get it for 99 cents for junior appetites. That's not me. I do not have a junior appetite. The Rib Delight,
ooh,
barbecue loin ribs, French fries, hot sauce, and a muffin. You can get a bucket o' chicken, a Shrimp Delight, that's jumbo Gulf shrimp, nice, French fries, shrimp sauce, and a muffin.
What kind of muffin is it? Like cornbread or something?
I have no idea.
I feel like this was muffins before muffins became what we know of.
No, there's a picture of it. It's a blueberry muffin.
Oh my God.
Look at this on the plate.
Oh yeah.
That looks like a blueberry muffin.
That's such a weird combo.
So weird. Fish Delight, which is like fried fish. A la carte options are coleslaw, French fries, bucket of shrimp, bucket of ribs.
You can get this is my type of food, I have to say.
This sounds delicious.
I wonder what happened to it. Oh, look at, yeah, I feel like I've seen this bucket. It's kind of iconic.
Yeah, it's like orange and yellow.
Yeah.
Anyway, so since in 1967, the guests were forced to order from Chicken Delight.
I'm sure they were like, oh, well, got to get Chicken Delight. What else can I do?
Though the LA Times piece proclaimed the chateau the last bit of Hollywood glamour, it had been falling apart for some time. It was so dramatic. In 1974, the actress Carol Lindley described her time living there. She said, "It's run by eccentrics for eccentrics. The apartment dwellers range from mafia types to nice old ladies to Filipinos. It's the kind of place where something gets broken and stays broken for 40 years. The one nice thing about it is you never have to worry about damaging anything."
Hmm. I like that description. Where something stays broken for 40 years. That's very specific.
It's very specific. Silent film actress Myrna Loy, she stayed at the hotel around this time in the 60s.
Oh.
And she sat on a chair and it broke while she was sitting in it. That's how shitty the furniture
was. Yeah, because she's probably like 90 pounds.
Yeah.
Or something.
And this chair broke out from under her. So shit in the hotel was literally pieced together with tape.
I mean, even today it has that. I know it's all finely made furniture and expensive, but it has that kind of shabby design aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like antiques.
Right. And at this time it was sort of on the borderline where it was like, all right, this place has become kind of a dump.
Right.
So the ceiling sometimes would rain plaster down on the guests in their bedrooms.
Not good.
Like, they needed to like do a little bit more.
Yeah.
The chateau was prone to having things stolen from random people just walking in off the street.
Oh.
In fact, in the 70s, Susan Sarandon had her luggage stolen from her room while she was sleeping.
That's creepy.
Yeah. The chateau had gone from shabby bohemian to straight up seedy at this point. It was sort of like, all right, guys.
Yeah.
Like, keep the boho aesthetic and the like antique, eclectic mix, whatever.
But not too boho.
Yeah, but not like, but like fixed stuff.
Yeah.
A little bit. The chateau would once again go up for sale. In 1975, it was bought by a development firm called Sarlat Kantarjian for $1 million.
Wow, that's cheap.
According to Raymond Sarlat, one of the firm's co-owners, the bank was ready to foreclose. Bills hadn't been paid in months, and the building was in total disrepair. The place looked like a dungeon. Following the purchase of the chateau, Sarlat would himself move in as he was going through a divorce. He stayed there for 5 years. He spent that time undergoing a massive renovation project on the dilapidated hotel. Though the renovations were extensive, the old charm of the place would remain. The furniture was replaced with newly purchased antique pieces. The lighting and carpeting was replaced. They drained the pool and restored it. The landscaping was torn up and replanted. The dirty walls were repainted. It was a massive upgrade while still keeping the beloved character of the hotel. I think that's cool that they weren't like, we're going to make this modern.
Yeah, let's keep it what it was.
Yeah, they kept like the same vibe. They just made it nicer.
I think that's smart. In old Hollywood, like Hollywood stuff, keeping old Hollywood stuff that look.
Yeah. Yeah. People like that.
Although
it
very easily could have been people who didn't agree with us, though, because that happens all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
In 1976, the chateau was declared a historic cultural monument. So what that means is what we were just saying, that developers can't just renovate.
Oh, good.
And make it some big glass box.
Yes.
So they have to
keep the historical look of it.
Yeah, like if they make any renovations, it has to go through like approvals.
Right, and it's usually keeping things accurate to the period.
Yeah, so here's a great segue. After Roman Polanski's 1977 arrest for sexually assaulting then 13-year-old Samantha Gailey, he checked in to the chateau while he was out on bail.
Oh.
We've done, I think, a two-part episode on Roman Polanski.
Right.
So I'm not going to get into all of that, but we did a very extensive episode on him. So he checks into the hotel while he's out on bail. He wanted the privacy. Obviously, he had become persona non grata.
Right.
Everywhere in Hollywood. During the next few months, he would hide out in his room at the chateau, but he invited guests over who said that he went on long rants about the criminal justice system. He had been effectively barred from any kind of a social life in Los Angeles, so he made friends with the chateau's parking attendants. Of course, his stay would not be for very long as he fled to Europe early the following year, where he remains to this day.
I wonder why he didn't go back to his house. Maybe it was like a crime scene or something.
I don't think he wanted anything to
do. Yeah.
Oh, not, I'm thinking that's Cielo Drive.
Well, no, he lived where he assaulted her.
Oh, right.
That, was that at Jack Nicholson's house?
It was at Jack Nicholson's house.
Okay, I forgot that it wasn't his house.
There was so much to his story, I like couldn't even remember.
Right, because it was like, let's start in the Holocaust. Like, it was literally that, because that's where he starts. Right. Like, his story starts, basically.
That's why I'm pretty sure it was a two-part episode.
Yeah, because he has a lot of huge, you know, crime or traumatic, whatever, it's events in his life. Yeah.
It's a big, long story. So anyway, go listen to that episode if you haven't yet. Another famous, well, I mean, look, these are all famous guests we're talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Here's some, his name is Bob from Missouri.
Rick James.
Oh, he was now we can talk about cocaine.
Now we can talk about cocaine. He was also a one-time resident of the chateau. And yes, we will be doing a Rick James episode.
Oh my God, yeah.
Probably have to do that this year.
I think it would be fun.
I think we should this year. The legendary musician known for his hard partying OD'd multiple times in his bungalow, and he had to be revived by his entourage. During his stay at the chateau, James was having an affair with Jan Gay, who was Marvin Gaye's ex-wife.
Oh.
Marvin himself was no stranger to the hotel. He stayed there many times. He also liked to party and fuck at the chateau.
Ugh,
he racked up. And we will do an episode on Marvin Gaye.
It's on my list every year and I just never got to it for whatever
it's
reason.
It's too big.
It's I just
so
love
big.
Him too.
I know.
He's just so
We want to do Marvin Gaye justice. He racked up a $15,000 in charges at the hotel, which the owner said he never paid.
Ugh.
They tried to collect it from his estate when he was tragically murdered in 1984, but to no avail. They ended up just letting the matter go because they're like, we don't want to be the guys who sue Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
After he was murdered.
It's tacky.
It's super tacky. Tony Randall and his wife stayed at the chateau while he filmed several of his shows, including The Odd Couple. Him and his wife both like to sunbathe naked outside of their bungalow.
Not Tony Randall.
Tony Randall liked to whip his dick out.
Wow.
Quite possibly one of the most famous residents of the Chateau Marmont, I think, would be John Belushi.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people who haven't been to Los Angeles or don't know, like they know the chateau, they associate it with John Belushi.
I mean, that's probably how I first heard of it in a way. Just like, not that I remember him dying, but like afterwards hearing the story, it was like at the Chateau Marmont. I was like, Oh, yeah.
So on February 28th, 1982, John Belushi had been staying at the chateau for about a month. He had stayed in room 69 and room 54 before finally settling into bungalow 3. Belushi had been working on a new film script during his stay. He had a variety of meetings with other writers, his friends, and film execs to discuss the script, which he was struggling with. Paramount was unsatisfied with the script, and the then boss of Paramount, Michael Eisner, came by to convince him to take up a new project. But by this time, Belushi was quickly spiraling further into his drug and alcohol addiction. This was evident not only by his appearance, which was really bad, but by his trashed room and just his overall scattered behavior and unpredictable whatever. He was a mess. Belushi's wife, Judy, and his best friend, Dan Aykroyd, desperately wanted him to get back to New York City and like leave the chateau. But sadly, he didn't. Again, we will be doing a full episode on John Belushi at some point. So I'm just going to run through this sort of briefly.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into like all the details, But on the night of March 4th, 1982, Robert De Niro and Harry Dean Stanton had been calling Belushi, trying to get him to come out with them, but they couldn't get a hold of him. They drove to the chateau where they found Belushi in his bungalow looking like absolute shit. He was surrounded by pizza boxes and empty bottles and dirty laundry. There was a woman named Kathy in the room with him. And both Belushi and this bungalow were just trashed.
Yeah.
John Belushi told the guys, go out without me and then come back later and hang out with me at the bungalow. So a few hours after that, Robin Williams stopped by the bungalow. They're all friends, to see John Belushi. So the pair hung out for a bit, did some cocaine, and then Robin Williams left. Robin Williams later recalled being really creeped out just by being in that bungalow. Like, it was just creepy, the vibe. Robert De Niro came back soon after and did some coke with John Belushi. De Niro went back to his own room at the hotel at around 3 a.m. Room service came at 8 a.m. on the morning of the 5th, and Kathy had some breakfast while John slept. She left soon after. Later, at around noon, Belushi was discovered by his personal trainer, Bill Williams. He attempted to do CPR on the unresponsive Belushi, but it was too late. John Belushi had died of a cocaine and heroin overdose. Not long after, guests of the chateau saw the paramedics and the police arriving at the hotel lobby. The chateau's general manager, Suzanne Girgirian, wasn't at the hotel when all this went down, so she returned to a barrage of reporters and police, and she was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell's going on here? Co-owner Raymond Scarlett was having lunch in Beverly Hills when the news broke, so he rushed back to the chateau, and when he arrived, he recalled the frantic scene, saying the hotel was, quote, swarming with outsiders, the switchboard lit up. Robert De Niro was among the many people calling the front desk, just trying to get information about what's going on. He did finally speak to the manager, Suzanne, who broke the tragic news to him. Raymond Scarlett quickly secured the hotel from looky-loos and reporters. A police barricade was set up to block non-guests from entering. Unfortunately, one reporter did slip through and made his way up to Robert De Niro's suite.
Oh my God.
To like interrogate him. Like, oh, yeah. You know, John Belushi's dead. Like, he was banging on his door, and Robert De Niro's obviously like sobbing.
Yeah.
Like, really upset, and he's grieving. This was like live TV too. This guy had a camera. Ugh. The next day, Belushi's manager, Bernie Brillstein, was allowed to pick up Belushi's belongings from his room. Brillstein said of Bungalow 3, the scene was not only depressing, it was depraved. I couldn't believe John had lived there. I mean, it was like a hoarder's situation in his bungalow with like garbage and old food, bottles, plates. After a deep clean of the bungalow, Raymond Scarlett decided to redo the whole thing. They put in new furniture. They changed the decor. They like moved things around.
Right.
Because to him, he said, we didn't want this unit to become a cult symbol.
Right.
They just wanted to, like, whatever. That it obviously didn't stop people from booking Bungalow 3.
Right.
Specifically. So, like, lots of people have. It's obviously a very famous bungalow. Bob Woodward released his controversial biography of John Belushi in 1984. Which drew the ire of Belushi's friends and family for portraying the late comedian as nothing more than a degenerate, rather than focus on his artistic brilliance. Raymond Scarlett took umbrage with the book for a different reason. The chateau was described as a seedy hotel. He was like, how dare you?
Yeah.
This costs like $200 a night.
Yeah.
How dare you call this a
smirch? This hotel's name.
He did not give a shit about what they said about John Belushi. He didn't. Right. He didn't know the guy, but he was like, "How dare you say this on the book jacket? On the book jacket." So him and co-owner Carl Kantarjian filed a suit against the book's publisher.
Oh damn,
Simon and Schuster. This matter was settled, and the description of the hotel of on the book's jacket was subsequently changed. Now, following Belushi's death, the hotel became known as a landmark of hedonism to people outside of Hollywood. Bungalow 3 became especially infamous. And it's one of Hollywood's many haunted sites.
Yeah.
I mean, famous. Whenever you look up haunted Hollywood, Bungalow 3 is always on the list. In fact, we had an very old episode that I believe we did for it's on our Patreon, where we talked about haunted Hollywood locations.
Yes.
So we've talked about the Hollywood sign, Bungalow 3, the Roosevelt,
the comedy store,
among many others. That was a good episode.
Yeah.
So Bungalow 3 is among those. According to Dan Aykroyd, in an interview that he did just a few years ago with The Hollywood Reporter, Al Franken claims, this is what he said, quote, Al Franken claims he went there a week after my late partner John died in Bungalow 3, and John appeared to him. And Franken's pretty skeptical, but he's also quite serious. He saw a vision of him. Now, of course, skeptics would say hypnagogic sleep, and you're dreaming. We welcome the skeptical view. I've stayed in the Marmont a few times, and I've never had anything happen. Isn't Dan Aykroyd like a aliens guy?
Yeah, pretty big one.
Yeah.
So he's not a skeptic, as far as I know.
He's not a skeptic.
Right.
No, he believes in some off-the-wall shit.
Yeah.
Like some definitely. Unexplained events.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Desi, do you have anything to add?
I just wanted to add one thing. I think I mentioned a while ago that I was watching a movie called The Offer, about the making of The Godfather. And the producer of that movie, who was played by Miles Teller in the movie, his name is Albert Ruddy. He married a woman, Francoise, who owned the chateau during the 70s. I think her husband was one of the buyers, and she like got control of it in a divorce briefly, like in their divorce. So she was sort of the owner. I just thought that was interesting. Rachel's staring at me like, this is the most boring piece of information I've ever heard.
No, I was actually doing the algebra lady in my head, because in the story, I mentioned how the guy, Raymond Scarlett, was going through a divorce when he purchased.
Yeah, I wonder if she is the wife, because that's how she got it, through a divorce. She was married to some really rich guy before she met Albert. Oh. And then the other interesting thing about her is she got involved. She's like this French woman who married into money, got the chateau, and then at some point, obviously, she didn't own that. But she was like the secretary after Ma Anand Sheela in Wild Wild Country for that guy, that cult. Oh. She got involved in that cult later on.
Whoa.
Which I thought was really wild. Because I looked her up when I was watching The Offer. I was like, who is this woman? Because she seemed really cool. And I think you had maybe talked about doing the chateau. So I was like, oh, she owned it. But it wasn't a lot of information about her ownership, but it's a bigger deal in The Offer.
Yeah.
And then I looked her up and I saw that information about her being in that cult. And I just thought that was a crazy connection. But it also seems very LA.
Yeah.
Like you're rich and then you get involved in some wild, weird cult.
Right.
Because you're trying to be spiritual at the same time.
That is a weird connection.
Yeah. So I definitely have a book and I plan on doing The Making of The Godfather at some point, hopefully soon, because it is a really wild story.
Yeah.
There's lots of mob action in it. Maybe I'll do it next week.
Okay.
It's really interesting though. So
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, Desi, how was my first show back?
Great. I mean, I think it's a good one to get back into.
Yeah.
With.
We'll continue, because obviously I want to touch on some more 1980s stories, some 90s stories, and of course, you know, the 2000s.
Oh, yeah. It had like a whole new heyday.
It had a whole new heyday. So we will return, not next week, but we will return with part 3 of Chateau Marmont. I hope you enjoyed this episode.
We'll post some pics.
We'll post.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
pictures on our Instagram, and we're going to record our after show, which is available on our Patreon. So subscribe if you'd like to listen to that. Bye.
Bye.